What's up, cousin? Welcome to Coco Conjure. Here we talk about all things hoodoo, folklore, and spiritual journeys. My goal is to give foundation to the novice and inspiration to the advanced practitioner. If you have not guessed already, my name is Coco. Well, as evident by the title, this is an Other Tales original. So this short story is written by me using my knowledge of folklore, folktales, and spiritual work while following our root lady extraordinaire, Monroe Devereaux. Listening to the previous Other Tale original is helpful, but not necessary, as it's my aim to make sure that each one of these originals stand on their own. I do have to tell you, going into this, there is a trigger warning for domestic violence. So if that upsets you in any way, maybe we should just skip this one for now, or skip to the end where I just give the work. Because usually at the end of folklore episodes, I do a breakdown, and it does still feel a little weird doing it to my own work. But at the end, I will extract whatever work was done and give you a play-by-play. Remember to take care of yourself, and without further ado, I present to you an Other Tales original, Haints in the House. When Ro pulled up to her uncle's home with a car full of everything she owned, she expected the worst, the absolute worst. Though her late Uncle Remus was a man about the world, having visited each continent no less than twice, even Antarctica, he called the nowhere town of St. Stephen's his home. Her uncle slept on the finest Egyptian cotton with absurd thread counts, had photos of him dancing in exotic locales with trendsetters and world leaders, and yet this simple, dusty, white-shingled, green-accented two-story home in bumfuck nowhere was his home base. The last time she saw Uncle Remus breathing was in some bougie Parisian apartment. He was decked in fine silks and adorned with silver and gold jewelry. They sat on a chaise lounge and sipped wine that cost more than she made in a year. He tried to convince her to join him in his opulence, to be a nomad and have adventures before she got too old and her knees started to creak. He wanted her to abandon her pursuit of healthcare and be his companion. He'd teach her all there was to know while funding the journey, but alas, Ro had already dedicated her life to a man with the hopes of marriage to follow, and to a career that promised good dividends if she stuck it out. And honestly, the glitz and glamour of a gilded road to everywhere didn't appeal. She wanted roots. She wanted foundation. She wanted stability. Though now, looking at the sad and sagging foundations of this home in desperate need of repairs and a good power wash, situated at a crossroads in the back sticks of Lowcountry, she understood why Uncle Remus was restless. Ro released a sigh, fixed her face, and remembered herself. The last time she sat with Uncle Remus in Paris was 10 years ago, and she had nothing to show for herself. No wedding ring. After 6 years, the man wanted to leave, so she released him back to the streets. She wasn't a high-earning surgeon. The residency burned her out completely. And she had no adventures, except for the one Uncle Remus set her on when he died. She all but stopped living, and now she was playing this weird game of catch-up. Also, she wasn't above a small town. According to the family lore Bible, her people came from here. They worked the land when they were enslaved, lived on the very plot of land when they were free, and continued to come back to it as a home base. The buildings on this plot have been slave quarters, mobile homes, businesses, and with Uncle Remus, and hopefully under her as well, a quaint bed and breakfast for people too broke to stay in the big city 45 minutes away. And if we're being real here, Ro was a broke city girl herself. She drove 8 hours praying her car didn't break down and thankful for her old roommates making her snacks. She should be grateful to have a free house and the wealth amassed by her uncle to fix it up. Ro gripped the steering wheel and centered herself. She had to go inside in order to get a better grasp on how much money needed to go into the house and how much she could spend on herself now. She looked in the rear view and spoke over herself. Ro, there's nothing to go back to, so just keep moving forward. And with every step forward, Ro made a running to-do list. The grass around the front right side was dead. She needed to study up on landscaping. The steps were rickety and under the steps looked worse, like wildlife called it home. There was even a perfectly preserved wasp's nest under there. The porch ceiling had chips of paint falling and was an off-putting powder blue. More importantly, the porch foundation sagged as she walked, making the thing a death trap. Ro patted her pocket for the key. Her eyes went wide and she sucked her teeth. Did she just drive 8 hours, abandoning her old life, only to forget the key to her new house? I know you fucking lying. Wait, didn't people in small towns like to leave the doors unlocked? Ro jiggled the antique doorknob and the thing fell off. Okay, one more thing for her to-do list. She pushed at the door, but the deadbolt didn't budge. She groaned in frustration and said out loud for the world to hear, This is not my life. I'm getting in this fucking house. She banged on the door to emphasize her annoyance, and that's when she saw it. A small engraving of crossbones on the upper right corner of the door. Ro swiped her hand over it to make sure she saw what she saw, risking tetanus in the process. Yep, the symbol of the Crossroads King was etched into the door. She pulled the skeleton key the Crossroad King gave her from around her neck and placed it in the deadbolt lock. An easy click of the lock sliding out of place followed. She still had to shove at the door a bit, but eventually it swung open. The amount of dust that greeted her sent her into a sneezing fit. Once that cleared, though, Ro was able to see the place looked untouched. The opulent style of Uncle Remus touched everything in the place, from ornate Elizabethan-style sofas to the oriental rugs. The crown molding was actually gold-gilded, and the deep greens and rich purples made it feel like she was back in that Parisian apartment. Even upstairs, all the beds were ornately detailed, though the mattresses needed replacing, and the clawfoot tub begged to be filled and used. The master bedroom was damn near perfect. Expensive and probably empty perfume bottles and a vase filled with long dead flowers sat on the vanity. There was his and her armoires flanking a proper king-size bed. If it wasn't for the fine layer of grime over everything in the house, the place would be perfect. For now, the place just needed to be aired out. It smelt stale and it was stuffy, almost hot, especially in the master bedroom. Ro attempted to open all the windows and the back door, but only the right side window facing the front of the house and the master bedroom would budge. The rest were just swollen shut, painted shut, or she feared the glass would slide around and break. The lights didn't work either. She flipped one switch and then heard a pop fizz coming from a circuit breaker somewhere nearby. No big deal. That and the other things on her to-do list she addressed with the contractor in the morning. And she packed candles just in case this would happen. For now, she just needed to sweep the place out before she brought anything else inside. When Ro went back to her car, she was greeted by two old ladies peeping inside her back window. One was dressed in a muumuu and a head wrap, the other in a long skirt and short sleeve shirts that showed her military tattoo. Good morning, ladies, Ro said as she approached. The two old ladies backed away from her car like they got caught doing something. The one in the muumuu almost dropped a heavy Dutch oven she was holding on to. "Hey, say you mean to move into that dump," said the one in the skirt. "Now, Ethel, that's not how we talk to our neighbors," said the one in the muumuu before turning to Ro. "I'm sorry, darling. I'm Bethel, and that there's my roommate, Ethel. Judging by your tags, you came a long way. Here, take this pot before my arm gets tired." Bethel shoved the pot into Ro's arms. It smelt like butter beans and smoked meat. Ethel came around the car and produced a pie and a bottle of cheap, sweet wine before snooping around the front yard. Ro was helpless to stop her. "Reverend said young blood like you was going to show up at the Devereaux house once we heard about good man Remus," Bethel continued, as if everything was normal. "Oh, you knew my uncle?"
"Knew him. Niece, we grew up together till he got that travel bug. He let Ethel and me stay in the house till our double wide showed up, us and some other couples. Only man in town to help us out when the street got set on fire. Whole bunch of houses went up in smoke. All the houses except for that one there."
"The Reverend prayed for us and took up collection, Beth," Ethel added.
"You mean Mrs. Reverend took up collection? Reverend don't care for me and you. But we do nice Christian things, like booze up our neighbors and make sure the kids is fed at church on Sunday. So Mrs. Reverend wasn't going to be outdone by Remus," Bethel countered.
"You ain't lying," Ethel said as she hiked up her skirts and stepped into the house. "Now you make sure you fix up this step now. People going to catch death trying to get inside."
Yes, ma'am," Rose said,
a laugh in her voice. Bethel drew Ro's attention by tapping on the pot that Ro still held.
"Now you gonna need rice. I told Ethel we should make you some rice."
Then Bethel shouted toward the house,
"We should have made some rice, Ethel."
"What now? We ain't playing dice, Beth?" was the call from the house. Bethel dropped a look at Ro.
"That old bat can't hear a damn thing. Military blew her drums and she refused to wear her hand aid. And she can make rice if I made it for her, I'm telling you. But I hitched my wagon to hers and the VA sent them checks. So here we is, you know."
Ro wasn't sure she kept up, but she also didn't want to be rude. So she just nodded and gave a polite laugh. Thanks for this food. I promise to return your dish with something delicious inside."
"Mm-hmm. So you is a Devereaux, right?" Bethel asked while pulling glasses out of a pocket and inspecting Ro. "Yeah, you got that Devereaux nose, looking like your uncle and your daddy."
I guess I favor my, mm-hmm," Bethel interrupted.
"So was you born with your uncle's gifts or you a dud like your daddy?"
Just then, Ethel came hot-footing it down the steps while shouting, "Bethel, we going home. That place still haunted."
"I'm sorry, still haunted? You been in that house and you ain't feel that hot heat. Hate's in there, so I'm out here," Ethel said, walking past Ro and Bethel, beelining it for her trailer.
Ro called after her, but it was futile. So she gave an apologetic look to Bethel instead.
"I'm so sorry. The house is stuffy because the windows won't open. That's why it's hot. That's all it is."
For the first time since they met, Bethel got quiet, took a breath, and smacked her lips. She looked at the house and she looked at Ro.
"Oh, so you ain't got your uncle's gifts. Well, if that's the case, just come on over and I'll make up the spare room and get you that rice. Can't have the haints throwing heat on you."
Bethel looped her arm in Rose and started to escort her across the way to her home. Ro took two steps before coming back to herself. "Wait, Miss Ethel."
"No, baby, it's Aunt Bethel. That biddy over there walking to safety without us, that's Ethel."
"Right, sorry.
Aunt Bethel, I plan on staying here tonight. Without your uncle's gifts? Then you's a damn fool, excuse my language. I've been inside, and I'm telling you, the place just needs to air out a bit. I'll be okay, I promise. If you say so, niece, your mind been made. But promise me, once them haints show, you march over to me and your Aunt Ethel right over there. Don't die from pride now. Bethel patted Ro on the back and walked home. Ethel opened the door and shouted, "Oh, so she ain't coming?" "The fool says she gonna stay," Bethel responded. "Poor girl won't last the night. She gonna die from her pride." "Just get the spare room ready, Ethel. Nobody need to hear your talk." Ro got the place swept from back to front and managed to open the window in the master bedroom after a while. Before the sun set, she laid her sleeping bag across the sofa in the living room and lit a fair number of candles. She currently sat eating her butter beans and taking a bottle of cheap wine to the head while combing her family lore Bible for anything haint related. It ran the gamut of information: how to keep them at bay, psalms to pray for home protection, floor washes needed to clean the home. But on the topic of getting them out of the house, the only entry was two sentences from a great aunt Beulah. It simply said, "Cuss them bitches out, then smoke out the house. Use pine, camphor, rosemary, and sage." Thanks, Aunt Beulah, for that detailed and informative play-by-play. Ro looked up haint removals on her phone, but each online practitioner said a whole lot of nothing, then prompted the viewer to go to their website and book their services, like haint removal was some trade secret or something. Ro took a second to feel her surroundings. Was it cold? Was it hot? A gust of wind, maybe? No, nothing. She felt absolutely nothing. Just because Uncle Remus gifted her the family lore book and the Crossroad King granted her petition, that didn't mean she had the gift. Hell, clearly she was less gifted than Aunt Ethel. At least the nosy old bag felt something. As far as things looked, Ro couldn't say for sure if the place was haunted. It did feel heavy and stale, but the house needed to breathe. Clearly, she had some studying to do, but all of that would have to wait for tomorrow's Ro, because the night was creeping along, and she was drunk on cheap wine, and she did drive 8 hours without stopping to get here. She was tired, and her sleeping bag was soft. Around 3 a.m., Ro woke with a start. A single bead of sweat trickled down her temple. She knocked the sleep out of her eyes and picked up a candle as she surveyed the room. She felt like she was being watched. Her gut, like that deep part of her soul, just couldn't find rest. But nothing was there. No threat to name. Ro lay back down, but something wasn't right, and she knew it. The tingles of panic crawled up her spine like a squirrel up a tree, even in the midst of calm surroundings. You know what? She fell asleep drunk. She was doomed to wake up crazy. That and the warning had gotten to her. She just needed to close her eyes and try to get a few more hours in before the contractor showed up. No sooner did she close her eyes, though, did she hear a loud smack followed by thump and the high-pitched cry of a woman coming from upstairs. Ro sat straight up like a vampire coming out of a coffin. "I know you fucking lying," she exclaimed. Like any sane person, she went straight to the front door. The handle fell off in her hands again, and the door was swollen shut. "I know you fucking lying," she exclaimed again, the panic edging in her voice. Thump, flop, flop, kaboosh. More sounds from upstairs. Ro looked at the stairs like they held all the answers. Was she really about to be the stupid person who investigated bumps in the night?
She stood frozen in place, waiting for a sign that she was just dreaming. A pig flying by, a purple elephant chasing a dwarf. Anything was better than hearing what she heard and feeling what she felt. Instead, she got a crash, clang, smack, followed by more screams. She exhaled slowly, bit her lip, shook her head slowly, and closed her eyes as she tugged on the door again, but it still wouldn't budge. She remembered her mantra. There's nothing to go back to, so just keep moving forward. Fucking hell, she said out loud. Candle in hand, Ro moved up the steps, flinching every time the old wood creaked under her feet. She wanted to surprise whatever was up there, and the house was basically announcing her presence. The sounds grew louder as she got closer to the master bedroom. She peeked in the door and was horrified by what she saw. The once dusty but well-designed room was a wreck. Broken glass on the floor, flowers strewn about, women's clothes all over the place, like someone had ransacked the room looking for something. And worst of all, a dark-skinned black man, who could have been a cousin or an uncle by the look of him, held a red-boned woman out the window by her nightgown and her throat.
Don't do it, Jim. Please, baby, let me back up,
the woman squeaked out as she pleaded for her life. Remus ain't coming to uncross me. You won't let me go. You won't let me go. How many times I gotta put my hands on you?
Jim, baby, I swear, pull me up and I'll let you go. I'll let you leave.
Nah, Tanika, you done said that shit before. But then I see you coming out that doctor man's house with the nest and other things. I can't even go for a quick drink with the guys because I'm tugged back here. Back to this fucking room. Jim's grip loosened on her nightgown and tightened around her neck. Rose stood frozen as she watched the scene.
Jim, please, baby.
The woman was losing air. No, no, you won't let me go till you's dead. You making me do this. I didn't want to, but you making me do it. And just like that, Jim tossed Tanika out the window. Without thinking, Ro ran into the room to the window in a failed attempt to save a woman that was probably long dead. The window wasn't high. Maybe she just broke a few bones. Surely not death from that fall, right? But from what Ro could see, the woman cracked her head and bled out before the residual image of her faded into nothing. Hank Jim turned to her slowly.
Oh, so you showing up now, Remus, he said, pointing an accusatory finger at her chest. You show up now after all this? Look what she fixed me to do. And I still can't go. I still can't get loose.
Jim screamed in Rose's face. Suddenly, everything was hot. Each word produced hell levels of heat. So much so, sweat dripped down Ro's neck and slicked her palms as she stumbled away from Hank Jim. Ro swore she saw steam rising around her and Jim. He moved slowly till he stood over her, straddling her. Then he reached back and gave Ro a solid slap across the face. Her neck whipped so fast, spit flew out of her mouth. She didn't feel the sting of a palm on her face. Instead, she felt like her cheek was just burned from a curling iron. The heat spread all over her body, engulfing her in flames and threatening her sanity. He slapped her again and again. She couldn't even see clearly it now. She couldn't grasp where she was or what was going on.
No! She scrambled as she kicked out from under him. I will not die like this. You will not touch me.
The words left her mouth like a command, and for a moment, Jim was stunned. It was all Ro needed. As she got up to her feet, she ran to the door screaming, "Fuck you, Jim!" She stumbled down the steps and crashed into the door, but the damn thing wouldn't budge still. And Jim was hot on her tail. "You stay away from me. You fucking stay away from me," she screamed. The command again.
Was she supposed to say a psalm or something to make this man go away? Fuck if she could remember anything that was in that Lord Bible. The heat was unbearable. You have to help me, Remus. You have to let me go, Jim said, stalking closer, bringing hellfire with him. Ro was losing grip on reality as the wall started to warp in. She reached for anything to use as a weapon. The closest thing near to her was the broom she used to sweep out the house. Jim lunged at her and she swiped him with the broom, bristle side out. Jim caught it with his hands and, out of fear, Ro let him have it. She crouched down, unable to move from her spot, unable to think clearly, fully prepared to take the next hot hit from this haint. But the hit never came. Instead, Jim stood there muttering, "You gotta let me go, Remus," while counting the bristles on the broom. Ro gathered what was left of her strength. I just gotta keep moving forward, Ro muttered to herself as she got to her feet and tried the first floor window. The damn thing wouldn't budge, no matter how much strength fear, panic, and adrenaline gave her. "Oh, I gotta move forward," she said again as she reached for the Dutch oven filled with leftover butter beans. She tossed it at the window, shattering the glass. Without thinking, Ro dove, tuck, and rolled to safety, landing where red-bone Tanika cracked her skull. She patted herself down to make sure her body was still in functioning order, then got to her feet and hightailed it to Bethel and Ethel's. It was Ethel that answered the door, and one look at that burn on Ro's face told her all she needed to know. "I told you that place was haunted." Ro rolled her eyes and shot inside. The cool night air helped to bring her mind back to her body. She didn't have a plan per se, but she read enough from the family lore Bible to piece together what she needed to be done. What Uncle Remus should have done before he died. With her limited knowledge and pure instinct, she beelined it for the kitchen. A selection of herbs were hanging up to dry in the kitchen window. Ro pulled down the rosemary and the sage while trying to remember which one of the two worked on haints.
"Hey, I was gonna make soup with that," said Bethel as she entered the scene tying up her silk robe.
"Shh, babe, let the girl work," Ethel hushed. Ro paused to look out the kitchen window. "Is that a charcoal or propane grill out back?" she asked as she crumbled the dry herbs in a bowl.
"Only charcoal round here," Ethel said proudly.
"Where do you keep the bricks?"
I'll
get you some." And with that, Ethel went off to gather materials.
"Well, you ain't burning up my good china, tell you that much," Bethel said as she gave Ro a cast iron skillet.
Ro paid her no mind and prayed over the herbs. "I call to you and my blessings come to me. Let your spirits rise and meet mine. Let my purpose become your purpose. I say this and I know I am heard." Bethel appeared next to Ro with some Vaseline for the burn on her cheek.
"You learned that from your uncle?" she asked.
Ro didn't answer, her mind far away from that kitchen as she finished up her work. Ethel returned with the charcoal bricks and matches. She threw the discs in the cast iron skillet and tucked the matches in Ro's pocket.
"Do me a favor," Ro said, turning to Ethel. "Simmer a pot for me with pine needles and camphor."
"How you know we got camphor?"
Ethel and Bethel asked at once.
"Your place smells like mothballs and menthol. Either you smoke or you have camphor." Without waiting for an answer from either lady, Ro marched back to her house.
"Well, you heard the girl, Beth. You get the camphor and I'll collect the pine needles."
Once back at her house, Ro peered inside. Jim was still counting the bristles and muttering. "Good." Ro took a breath, then set up the cast iron skillet in the center of the room. She lit the charcoal, and once it was hot enough, she tossed in the herbs. Smoke started to billow, filling the room and eventually the house. Jim threw down the broom and started to choke. "I want to go," he sputtered. "So go, you fool," Rose said as she took off her shirt and used it to cover her mouth so she wouldn't inhale the smoke. "You're dead. Just go." "I can't. I couldn't find it," he said. Fucking hell. The smoke was working, but something was still keeping him here. He was searching for something upstairs. The master room was tossed. Redbone Tanika wouldn't let Hank Jim leave when they were alive. She had something in that room that made him stay. She had to find it. Ro marched upstairs. She stood at the bedroom door and surveyed the room. Everything was tossed still. Whatever there was to find should have been found. The only thing that wasn't tossed was the mattress. Ro flipped the mattress and sure enough, ratty boxers with mysterious stains lay untouched on the box spring. Ro picked up the candle she left there, leaned out the window, and set the boxers on fire. She let it fall to the ground in flames. She went downstairs and waded through the thick smoke. She fanned the smoke so she could see, her eyes watering. Jim was still choking, but crawling out that broken window on the first floor. Ro sighed in relief and headed for the door. But a loud, masculine cry filled the house as Jim rematerialized and tried to crawl out the window again. Fucking hell! What else was keeping him here? Ro replayed the scene in her mind. Tanika went to a witch doctor and came out with a bag and a wasp nest. The wasp nest! Ro ran outside and found the perfectly preserved nest exactly where she left it. She reached under the steps, wildlife be damned, and grabbed the nest. She reached in her back pocket for more matches and set the wasp nest on fire. As soon as the last of it went up in smoke, Ro swore she saw a gem-shaped puff of smoke float out the broken living room window, and she swore she heard the house sigh in relief. It took an hour and a half for the smoke to clear the home. And that time, Ro dug around the dead patch of grass in her front yard and found what she could only assume was Tanika's bones and bits of cloth. She set the cloth on fire and placed the bones in a box to deal with later. Ethel and Bethel came over and helped Ro scrub the place down from floor to ceiling with the pine and camphor wash. By the time the contractor showed up the next morning, Ro and the two aunties were sitting on the front porch, exhausted. The man took one look at them and said, maybe I should come after lunch for that walkthrough.
Mm-hmm. I think that might be best, John,
Bethel answered for Ro. Then she turned to Ro and said,
come on, niece. Let's get you cleaned up and in a proper bed.
Bethel and Ro stalked off next door with no other words or fanfare. John, the contractor, looked at Ethel. Miss Ethel, he said, tipping his imaginary hat.
Good morning, John, Ethel greeted while standing. Let me walk you back to your truck.
So do I want to know what's going on here? John, the contractor, asked.
We got a Devereaux back in town. That's about all there is to say, Ethel hummed.
Oh, she got the gift like the ones in your stories, John said. His eyes followed Ro as she walked next door. Appreciation of the view was on his face in plain display.
Mm-hmm, Ethel said. And Reverend ain't gonna like that one bit.
Oh, man. I think the town of St. Stephen's is going to get tossed on its borders now that a Devereaux is back in town. And shame on Uncle Remus for not taking care of his family and his town like he was supposed to. I mean, it would be nice to, you know, globe trot, but sometimes we got to make sure we come back to our home base and take care of what needs to be taken care of. But that's not the story for today. Instead, we're going to talk haints, you know. How I understand it, a haint can be any unwanted, unrested, malevolent spirit. Though usually when I read about them, they were once people who met a horrifying end. Though that's not always the case. It's just, you know, usually when the tales are said in person, in books, as we whisper to each other, it's usually about a person who met a horrifying end. And you know you have a haint in your house because of unusual sounds and unexplained hot spots. A haint throwing heat will make you sick and in some instances can possibly kill you, according to legend. To prevent haints from entering your home, here are some steps to follow. We're going to start with the easiest and most known is you paint the porch ceiling and shutters to your home haint blue. Yes, that's an actual color. Haint blue will confuse the malevolent spirit and make it think it's crossing water. And if there's one thing haints don't like, it's crossing water. I heard a story about River Rocks doing the same thing. I think that was in Zora Neale Hurston's book, Tell My Horse, when she was in Haiti. But that's not as common here in the U.S., so do with that as you will. Similarly, using blue glass panes in your window or covering the windows with blue film will also confuse haints and keep them from entering your home, and it just looks pretty. Sticking with glass, erecting blue bottle trees outside or hanging blue glass bottles from a tree, it works. It's said to trap the haint inside the bottle. Be sure to salt your doors, windows, and corner of your house. Not that black salt stuff. I mean, you can use black salt if you want to, but that's not native to hoodoo. Just regular salt from your kitchen will work, though. Now, our girl Ro, she decided to mop her floors, walls, and unbroken windows with pine needle and camphor wash. That's a classic move, really. And if you go this route, it should be done with some sort of regularity. She didn't remember the psalm in the heat of battle, but Ro could have said or written down Psalm 91. If she wrote it down, she could have placed it at the front of her door and used it as a talisman. And if you do find yourself in Ro's predicament and you already have a haint in your house, then you'll want to distract it by covering the walls with newspaper so that haints will stop and read it, throwing rice or salt on the ground for the haints to count the grains, and or keeping a broom near your doors so haints will count the bristles. You can also slow down a haint by cussing it out. Cussing it out, curse words. And they invoke like a gut reaction in us, you know. It's something a little taboo depending on, you know, your morality. But cussing, it just really gets the spirit going. And by cussing, you can command it. To command the haint to do what you will. It might not last for a long time, but cussing it out does help. Similarly, keep a mirror near the front door. A haint will see its reflection and realize it's dead, and then it will skedaddle skadoot. And finally, use a mix of sage or whatever cleansing herb you prefer. Like, I don't personally like sage. I like rosemary or hyssop, and smoke out your home. I like to pray over my work so that all spirits in attendance are in symphony, though I do not command these spirits of the herbs in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, as is typical, because, you know, your girl is a secular hoodoo. If you do go this route, be sure to remove children and pets and be sure to open the windows so the haint can leave. If the person died in the home, be sure to remove their belongings and rearrange their room so if their spirit is unrested, they won't be familiar with the space and they'll be forced to move on. And that's it. That's the work. I hope you had a great time with Ro, Ethel, and Bethel. I had a blast writing and performing it, and I hope you enjoyed your time here with me. Before we go, cousin, I want to let you know that you deserve the world. No haint, hag, or hellhound will stop you from achieving the life you desire. Just remember that you can't go back and we can't live in regret. All we can do is face the challenges ahead of us and keep moving forward. And know
that if you call for your blessings, cousin, they will come to you. I'll see you guys next time.